You're listening to the Million Praying Moms podcast, where we believe every mom is uniquely designed by God for His purpose, but also a part of something much bigger than she could ever be alone.
Authors and moms, Erin Mooring and Brooke McLaughlin.
Hey, that's us.
Hey, it is. We're going to help you make prayer your first and best response to the challenges of parenting. Listen in on real life conversations with the experts about real issues parents face today and learn practical ways to focus on Christ as you seek wisdom and hope for the difficult job of raising children in today's world.
If you're ready to handle life with grace because you've been in the presence of God, you're in the right place.
Here are your hosts, teachers, writers, speakers, moms, and lovers of all things cozy, comfortable, and coffee-related, Brooke and Erin. Hey there, friends.
You're listening to episode number 30 of the Million Praying Moms podcast, where each week we're talking about the real issues Christian parents face today. On today's episode, we want to talk to the moms of boys out there about a subject that's pretty important to us both.
Yes. So as you guys know, Erin and I are both boy moms, meaning we have all boys in our homes. I heard my cousin say one time, and I believe this is true, that you can go far in life simply by using manners. Teaching our boys to be respectful, kind, loving, and considerate, especially when it comes to the opposite sex, is something that has been pretty high on our priority list here in our home. But it isn't always easy to do, especially in today's culture where women are often objectified and undervalued.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere. Like, we can't deny it. And sometimes we're even doing it to ourselves as women about what we're valuing and putting out there is important. But the interesting thing in our household, and we talk about this a lot, Brooke and I both have teenagers now, at least some of mine are, and the more conversations about awareness of girls and how their friends are treating girls and all of that, it's getting interesting. The conversations are getting interesting around here, and there's a lot more talk about what people are saying, what their friends are saying about girls, how they're treating them. And it's been eye-opening for me. And, I know that there's going to be some harder conversations ahead, and that's what happens when they grow up. But we can start early. You know, there's a lot of things we can do to start early. And
Absolutely.
I'm really excited about this topic.
Yeah, me too. And I will say the author of the book that we're having on the show today tells a really eye-opening story about something that happened to his son at the beginning of the book. And I'm not going to give that away because I think there's a value in reading it for yourself. But when I was reading that story, I was just nodding my head over and over again. Yes, yes. As having a 14-year-old who's almost 15 and in high school right now, those are the exact kind of stories that our children are coming home from school with as well. And it can be hard as a parent to know what to do with those and how to answer them. So in our very first episode of this podcast, Erin, the very first one, number one, we talked about how the future is actually male and female. There's a push in our culture today to elevate women over men. And people say, you know, the future is female. I've seen that all over Instagram, all over Facebook, speaking to the idea that as we progress as a culture, women will have more and more influence. So we're not saying that it's wrong for women to have influence, just that God made both sexes to work together for His glory.
Amen.
The future doesn't exclude males. And the call for men to treat women with a respect that honors God is independent from our cultural norms. So what the culture might say about how women should be treated isn't always exactly what God's expectation of men is for the way that they would treat women. And we've always told our boys that God made them to be protectors of women, whether the women want to be protected or not.
Yeah, it's a confusing time for our boys. It really is. And they try to juggle being respectful of the girls around them while at the same time refusing to, you know, demonize true masculinity. Like, that God created masculinity. It's not a bad thing, but
right.
In its true form is how He created. So our guest today says his mission with this conversation is to help restore a broken view of manhood and call boys to a higher standard of manhood without shaming them for being male, which, Brooke, like, this is why we started the Mob Society 9 years ago. Is exactly what he's saying here. Is it's not bad to be male, and God created men in a certain way for a certain purpose. And we are just saying amen and amen. We love the sound of this. This is why our ministry started, and it's evolved over the years, but that's what started it all. And so we're excited about this topic. But before we dive in, let's hear from our sponsor for the day.
Did you grow up with Bob, Larry, and the rest of the VeggieTales gang? Now your kids can too with Minnow.
Minnow is an ad-free streaming video app designed just for kids, with 30 episodes of classic VeggieTales plus thousands of other shows that teach kids about Jesus.
You'll feel safe letting your kids choose any show they want to watch on Minnow. You won't have to worry about what might pop up, and there aren't any commercials.
Visit gominnow.com. That's M-I-N-N-O. Use coupon code PRAYINGMOMS to begin your 7-day free trial and start streaming anytime, anywhere on your phone, tablet, TV, or computer. You can even download your favorite shows to go and stream on multiple devices at once.
With Minnow, kids discover God in stories they love, and parents find expert help and everyday encouragement as they lead their family in faith. Minnow helps you have the conversations that really matter with your kids so you can experience the goodness of God together.
Minnow, stories kids love, values parents trust. Use coupon code PRAYINGMOMS to start your free trial today at GoMinnow, that's MINNO.com.
There is so much controversy and confusion around what a real man actually is and how he should treat a woman. Most boys, if they admit it, are extremely confused about how they're supposed to act these days. Our guest today has tackled so many of these confusing issues in his new book, Raising Boys Who Respect Girls, Upending Locker Room Mentality, Blind Spots, and Unintended Sexism. Man, I just love that title. Like, that is a power-packed punch title right there.
There's a lot there.
It's like, we're covering everything. So that's fantastic. I have to admit, guys, though, when I was reading this book, it is not an easy read. And by that, I don't mean like the grade level that you're on. Anybody can read it. What I mean is that our guest spends a good deal of time proving that, or making a case for what's actually happening to women in our culture before he makes a case for how we can improve them. And it is eye-opening and in some cases disturbing to really pause and look at what is happening to women in our culture. And I'm not even just talking about in the United States. I'm talking about across the world. Some of it is hard reading, but I really believe that you're going to find it worth your time.
Dave Willis is the father of 4 boys and is a pastor and writer who has become one of America's most trusted voices on issues related to marriage, faith, and family. He and his wife, Ashley, are part of the team at Marriage Today, which is the nation's largest marriage ministry. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. Tell us about yourself and your family.
Well, I'm married to the wonderful and amazing Ashley Willis, and I married way out of my league. She's awesome, and we love doing marriage ministry together. It's an honor to get to work with her as part of the bigger team at Marriage Today. You know, we love our boys. We've got them ranging in age from preschool to high school, so we've got 4 different drop-off spots in the morning. We've got
preschool, bless you.
Elementary school, middle school, high school. It's nuts, but it's a lot of fun. And we live in Texas now, which is fun. So we're getting good barbecue and, trying to survive the hot summers, but it's a great place to live. And yeah, it's a good season of life.
We actually have a large group of listeners from Texas. So like everybody in the background that's listening right now is going yeehaw. So we're very excited. So, Dave, we're excited to have you on the show today, and we're just going to dive right in. In the intro to your book, you say something that I really want to camp on for just a bit before we dive into the meat of today, because I think it's important to set the tone. Some women might be offended by the simple fact that you are a man writing a book about how to respect women. And you do address that very quickly in the book. Some of those women might be, you know, thinking to themselves, man, this just furthers the patriarchal pattern that caused the problem in the first place. Like, so what business does a man have writing about these issues that affect women? And I have to admit, like, there are times, honestly, when it bothers me. I don't understand, you know, how can a man really write to subjects that are so clearly about women? But you say your response is that if men indeed have been a part of the problem, they need a chance to be a part of the solution. And that, I have to tell you, as a woman who can sometimes get annoyed by those things, that was a balm to my heart to hear you say it that way. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah, and I wanted to acknowledge it right off because I certainly understand that perspective. And I want, I just sent the heart of the book is to be part of the solution, not to be the answer or the voice or to further the patriarchal pattern, like you said, but really just to help men collectively rise up and say, we have been a huge part of the problem. And so we have a responsibility to be part of the solution. And then in addition to that, I also think that there is a benefit of a book like this coming from a dad's perspective in a way that for the moms who are reading it, as a guy, one thing I can do uniquely is I can help moms have a unique insight into the mind and heart of your son, because I know what it's like to be a teenage boy. You know, I know what it's like to wrestle with the thoughts and the feelings and the doubts and the struggles and the stresses and, you know, what's happening in the male brain, and to kind of give that information to moms in a way to help them connect with their son in a new way, while at the same time challenging the dads to say, hey guys, we got to step up. Because our example is teaching our sons for right or wrong. We're either setting them up, and our daughters for that matter, for a lifetime of blessings or a lifetime of baggage based on the lessons that we're teaching them. But throughout the book, I also certainly wanted to not let it be based just in my opinion and my limited vantage point as a guy. So the end of every chapter gives women the last word. And I'm so thankful for the many women who participated in sharing their insights and their stories. And they're really the heroes of this book. And so their insights, which are throughout the book and then, like I said, end every chapter, really bring all the points home through the female perspective. So the book would not have been nearly as strong without all those courageous and wise women sharing their insights. And so I'm really thankful for them.
That's something that Brooke and I have talked about a lot in raising boys. I didn't have any brothers. So I had a sister, and even my husband had a sister. And so we didn't have the brother thing going on. I have no idea how the male brain works. And so that was one of the biggest things in having three boys was like, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, why would they make that choice? That makes no sense. And my husband is able to look at that and say, well, it's because, you know, this, like, I've been there. I remember those things. And so I do, that point is a really good one, that you are talking about women, but you're talking about raising boys, and who understands that better than a male who has been there and understands the, you know, the reactions and the emotions and the hormones and all of those things that all confound us so much. So I love that point. And I think that's great that you address that right away. So it gets it out of the way and nobody's thinking that as they read the rest of it. We've got that addressed. So Dave, you said in chapter one then that we have an opportunity before us for the first time in human history to create a world where girls and women can experience equal respect and equal opportunity from their male counterparts and from the cultural systems at large. So that's a lot of stuff going on there. That's a big idea. What does that vision look like to you, and how does it start? Like, where do we start with that?
Well, I think it has to start in the home. Like right now, certainly, like culture-wide and really worldwide, I think that there is a movement. You know, the technology that exists has really brought the world together in a way that wasn't possible even a generation ago. And so all of that technology combined with this kind of, you know, movement of wanting to empower women, which is a good desire, I think the culmination of that is what's creating the opportunity that I talked about in the book for there really to be that kind of, you know, that true equality and respect the way that it should have existed for thousands of years, but sadly hasn't throughout the course of human history. But I think the way we're going about it is not complete, because usually we just look at politics, we just look at, you know, those kinds of things, when really I think it has to all start in the home. You know, one thing I say in the book is whatever's happening in the White House doesn't matter nearly as much to these issues as what's happening in your house and in my house. This has to start with the family. That's where true values are born. That's where true values are lived out. And so as moms and as dads, we have an opportunity to change the world for our kids and to help create a world for them where a generation from now, our sons and our daughters can really experience that beautiful respect and that equality, while at the same time celebrating their unique distinctions and differences that God gave them. You know, the world's trying to erase any kind of distinction between the genders, because there's this, you know, really messed up mentality that any kind of difference means there can't be equality. And so it's not only masculinity that's under attack. I would say, you know, biblical femininity is under attack. And our culture, the only time it seems to celebrate masculinity is when it's a woman who's choosing to be masculine. The only time the culture celebrates femininity is when it's a man who's choosing to be feminine. And it just kind of shows the confusion and some of the brokenness at the core of these issues. But within homes, within Christian homes that want to raise our kids with the biblical foundation for their lives, I really feel like this generation, we have an opportunity to help our kids really embrace, you know, what was that vision of God all the way back in Genesis when he created man and woman in his image, both of us in his image, with such beautiful harmony and equality, to be able to be part of restoring that. And that's something I think as parents we should strive for, and something I believe that our kids could really experience in the world they're growing up in.
Yeah, I love that idea that our house, you know, what's going on in our house is so much bigger than we think it is. We're thinking whatever's being talked about on the news is the big deal, but in our homes, and I honestly believe it's like it starts with what things we think are little, but I just thought of this example because you're talking about in our home and promoting that equality and that, like, it's a team, you know, it's like a team within your house, and you're not going to put down anyone else in the team or make them less important. And I'm fresh off of running a marathon this past weekend, and I just, my husband is my biggest champion in all of that. And he runs marathons as well. And so his training is not more important than my training. It's always, how do we both make this work? And that's just like a small example, but in our home, I feel like that's important for our boys to see. My husband is very fast. He's qualified for Boston and like all of that. But my training has never been put down or less important than his. If we both have long runs on a weekend, it's how do we make this work so we can both get it done? And it's such a simple example, but I believe it's speaking volumes to our boys that my dreams are not less important than his and vice versa. It's not one or the other, because I want to be more important or he wants to be more important, but that we want to support each other. And thinking of it in that team mentality is a great way to start. And we, like Brooke said, we had this episode earlier this year, when we started the podcast, about male and female. Like, we can't do it without each other. And that starts in the home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, my husband and I were interviewed one time, and y'all, my husband is not, he's not one that gets interview requests or does media spots or things like that. That's just not who he is. He's a very behind the scenes, kind of servant hearted man. So we were on this radio show one time, or actually it was before a radio show. It was an interview before a radio show. And the people that were interviewing us were asking me to talk about ways that my husband leads me in our home. And it was a Christian radio spot and those kind of things. And I gave them an answer, and I don't think they liked it. But this is the way it works in our home. And it really blesses me so much that he does this. He serves me. that's one of the best ways that he values me and respects me is he serves me. So for example, he is downstairs right now working out. He's off work today. So he's working out. And while he's down there, in between sets, he's folding the laundry. You know, little things like that, or just he'll do the dishes if they need to be done, or he just, if something needs to be cleaned, he just cleans it. He doesn't wait for me to do it. Or, you know, we don't really have those kind of defined roles necessarily in our home, although there are certain things that tend to be my responsibility and tend to be his responsibility, but he serves me so well. And in my opinion, that is one of the best ways that he shows me the heart of Jesus. And so I want to get into that piece because you do dedicate an entire chapter to what Jesus thinks about women and how Jesus treated women and what that should mean, what implications there are for us as the body of Christ, yes, but also as we've been talking about in our homes. What does that mean? You say that Jesus lifted women up and held them in higher regard than any other person of his time, and certainly in the history of his time. So let's talk for a few minutes about what Jesus's treatment of women actually teaches us about how women should be treated today.
Yeah, and I think the examples that both of you two just gave really, really lead into that. You know, Aaron's example of kind of those shared goals and realizing that you have to cheer each other on and that in marriage, and a lot of what my wife Ashley and I talk about in the marriage ministry we do and on, you know, our Naked Marriage podcast is what you two just shared, you know, that you don't win. It's not me winning or you winning. It's how do we win together as a couple? And then Brooke, what you shared about serving, which is the example Jesus gave. He said, husbands, love your wives the way Christ loved the church. And then he served, he gave his life, he sacrificed. And that was his whole model of leadership. So I think that answer you gave was great. And your husband is doing a great job. You know, that challenges me to be a better husband and to fold more laundry. Cause I think, you know, that's real love.
I'll tell him you said that. He'll love that.
Yeah. That's good stuff. But, no, the chapter you just referred to in the book, chapter two, and I say it in the intro and I mean it, I think it might be the most important chapter in the whole book, because Jesus is he's the most important example in all of history of a man respecting women and the way that that's supposed to be. And so in that chapter, Jesus' respect of women, it's called, I just kind of try to paint the picture of what was happening in the culture 2000 years ago. Jesus was living in a time and a place where women were not valued by and large. I mean, they did not have rights. They did not have a voice. Their only value was really seen in that they, you know, in their relationship to a man. She has value because she's so-and-so's wife or so-and-so's mother, but didn't have value in and of themselves as a person created in the image of God and an image bearer of God. And so Jesus comes along and turns that whole view upside down by the way he engages with women. Men didn't interact with women back then, but Jesus is always inviting them into the conversation. He's healing them. He's using them as heroes or heroines, rather, in his stories. Nearly every parable that Jesus tells, or you know, many of them have a female hero in them. And, you know, so that's very intentional. Jesus had great friends that were women, like Mary and Martha. Jesus was always willing to answer the request of a woman of faith who wanted healing. He was never too busy. And I, one of the longest conversations recorded in the Gospels is with a woman, you know, the woman at the well, which is breaking down both gender and kind of ethnic stereotypes, too, right? Because she was a Samaritan, somebody that would have been seen as an outsider. So I love the examples that that we have in the Gospels to say, okay, this is what it looks like to really respect women. Women in that day were used to being looked at with lust, distrust, or disgust. Most men looked at them through one or more of those lenses. They were just an object of lust. They were someone to not trust, which is why a woman's testimony wasn't even valid in a court of law. Or with disgust, you know, they were just kind of pushed to the side like there was something wrong with them. And Jesus came and he just erased all of that and pointed back to, you know, God's original and true design, which mankind had missed the mark on so much and the way women had been treated. So he's the perfect example. And one thing I say in that chapter is, you know, I want my boys to follow my example, but I also know that I'm imperfect. And there's no perfect guy out there that's going to always get it right. So I want them to know that there is a true north, so to speak. You know, there is a bullseye they can look to as their standard every time. And that's Jesus. You know, he never lets us down. And the way he respected women is just one of the many ways that he's our perfect example.
I think that's a really good point to make. You know, you're saying this about yourself and realizing that you're imperfect and you want your kids to follow your example, but ultimately Jesus's example that you're following. When we put, like, when we ask our men or our boys to have role models that are human and you put them on that pedestal, you know, it's not always going to work. they're going to fall. They're going to be mistakes. And it's good to have real life examples of people that are walking with Jesus and respecting women and following that example of Jesus, but they're imperfect and they will always fall. So always pointing them back to this example of Jesus as the ultimate respecter of women, as you said, is such a good point. And that's really, really important to drive home, because otherwise we're always going to end up disappointed or following the wrong person because it's not Jesus. So I'm glad you made that point. We want real life examples, but we want Jesus ultimately in all of that. All right. So we're going to get to a big buzzword right now. What is the locker room mentality? Okay. I mean, we're hearing this. We've been hearing this for a few years everywhere. And let's just talk about what is it, first of all. Okay. So let's start with that. We'll just start with what is the locker room mentality?
Well, the locker room mentality, the way that I kind of address it in the book, it's any place in a man's life where he feels like it's a safe place for him to be disrespectful toward women or objectifying toward women. A lot of times it's in a group of other men. It could be in an actual physical locker room, it could be in a chat room online, or it could even just be in a compartment in his own brain where no other guys are involved, but a place where he goes to and escapes into sinful fantasy. And he's like, as long as it stays there, then it's okay. And otherwise I'm a respecter of women, but that's the one place I can go and just, you know, blow off steam, so to speak. But really it's just indulging in some really reckless and dangerous and sinful mindsets about women. And sadly, you know, a lot of places I've been over the years, you know, whether it's just a group of guys in a locker room or, you know, even in work situations, sometimes even in church situations, when a group of guys are together and, you know, kind of let their guards down and what, you know, maybe starts out off as just kind of guys bantering and being silly and telling silly jokes can pretty quickly cross some lines into being objectifying toward women. And that mentality and that mindset and those kind of actions, if left unchecked, can really, really, I mean, they in and of themselves are dark places, and then they can lead to even darker places. And so I wanted to shine a light on that and just acknowledge the fact that it's happening and it needs to stop happening.
Yeah. And like you said, it's not just in locker rooms. So if you're like, well, my son is not in any sports that involve a locker room, so we're good. No,
right.
That's just kind of the buzzword because that's what we associate it with. But you know, it can happen anywhere. And like you said, even in churches. So now moms, be aware that it can happen anywhere, not just in a locker room. How can moms fight against that? How can they help their sons fight against that or even make a difference in them avoiding that mentality?
I think that we've got to be the safest place, you know, on earth for our kids to be able to come and talk about whatever it is they're facing and to really ask probing questions. Because most boys are not going to volunteer it on their own. Like we have to really ask, and we have to know what's going on in their life. We have to know what's going on their phone. And we have to be vigilant. I think that if we put our heads in the sand, which is sadly the approach a lot of times, we're setting up our kids for disaster. So we have to engage in a lot of conversations. And then we also have to be really careful, you know, with our own example, I think especially for the dads in this part, we need to be careful about just what jokes we're laughing at and what we're, you know, what we're a part of. And this is something that isn't outgrown, by the way. You know, my brother just yesterday was saying that he was at the gym at the YMCA, and there were two men in their 70s sitting in the sauna talking about porn, just like as natural as like if they were talking about a baseball game, and in, you know, detail talking about what, you know, what porn they liked and were into, and how he got a brand new computer with a bigger screen so he could, you know, enjoy his porn more. And, you know, this is kind of what we're up against. It's not something that you outgrow. This isn't an age issue. This is a sin issue.
Yes.
It can affect somebody at any age. But I think helping our sons from an early age recognize that they're going to be out there in so many situations and settings where they're going to be tempted, where there's going to be conversations going on. And part of respecting women is in what we say and do when the women aren't around. You know, I think that's really the integrity issue. It's one thing to just, you know, show respect to a woman when she's right in front of you. But real integrity and real character means I want to show respect to women and to God, by the way, even when I'm in a situation when there aren't women around to hear and there are men that are having conversations that are inappropriate, that I'm just going to decide in advance that I'm not going to engage in that. And if I really get pressed on it or made fun of about it, then I'd be willing to call them out and say, well, you shouldn't be talking that way either. There's a real character issue there. And so part of this book, I think that we need to help our sons recognize that part of respecting women, they might have to stand up and show some courage by being the one who doesn't participate and by sometimes being the one who calls out actions that are disrespectful and inappropriate. Because if nobody's going to call that stuff out, then we're going to keep seeing some of the problems we're seeing in our society.
Yeah, I think that's so important. There's two things that you said that I think are very important. One is that sometimes it's about teaching our sons to not only to walk away, but to also call it out. It is important for them to learn the power of walking away. Our son made a decision at the end of last school year to not participate in something because of what he had overheard in the locker room. Like, I mean, Aaron said it's not just the locker room, but it actually is also in the locker room. There is a foundation to that name for the concept. It definitely does happen in the locker room. And he decided, you know what, I'm not going to participate in this activity because I don't want to be a part of that, of what's happening. And so I was proud of him for that. I was sad that he had to miss out on the opportunity, which was otherwise, you know, good and kind of benign, morally speaking. But I'm glad that he made that decision because of why he did. But the other piece that you said that I think is so important is that you called it sin. You know, it's important for us to, there's this concept that's, I've heard it for so many years, this whole concept of boys will be boys. And there's some truth because boys will be, they are boys. There are things that my mind, and as Aaron said earlier, we just don't understand because we're not boys. We can acknowledge them. We can say that they're different. But that phrase, I think, can allow for us to facilitate a lot of potential sin. And the locker room mentality is sin. And we have to call it what it is for our kids to recognize. It's not just a funny thing. Oh, boys will just be boys. You know, it's not a thing to blow off. It's a real issue that's happening that we've got to talk to them about and call it what it is.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you said this quickly, but like I had to talk to my boys about the fact that laughing at a joke even is going to associate them with that locker room mentality. Like to them, I just laughed at it doesn't mean, you know, they don't think that's harmless. I just laughed because it was funny, but that associates you with believing what that was or that that's your mentality too, and that that's what you're thinking. And so warning them that if you're sitting with people that are talking that way, you're going to be associated with that. If you're laughing at what they're saying, you're going to be associated with that. And the more you are around that and laughing at it, the more normal it becomes to you. Mm-hmm. And it's not so harmless anymore. And the other thing, other than just walking away, you know, I have my oldest is not super confrontational, but he was experiencing some of those situations early on, even in fifth grade, where kids were saying things that he was uncomfortable with or using language he was uncomfortable with or talking about girls inappropriately. He wanted to say something, but he wasn't sure what. And there's a lot of boys that are in that situation where they're like, I don't want them to think I'm judging them. I don't want them to think I'm not their friend anymore. So the thing that we came up with for him was to say, come on, you're better than that. And it has been super powerful for him because his friends will be like, oh, he thinks I am a good person and he thinks enough of me to say, that's not who you are. Like, you are better than that. And he doesn't feel like he's saying, you're wrong, don't do that. Like, he doesn't feel like he's condemning them. And it's been really good for him. And he's become really comfortable in situations where language is being used that he doesn't like, or they're talking about something that's completely inappropriate, to just use that or to say, don't talk like that around me. Like, I don't appreciate that kind of language around me. Those two things make it more about calling out the goodness in their friends or to challenge them to be better. And also to say, I'm not comfortable with that, and not put it all on them. Just, I don't want to be around this. For him, those have been huge. And it helped him, who is not confrontational, to approach those situations with confidence, knowing I know what to say if something comes up that I don't like, and I won't feel like I'm losing a friend over it at the same time.
No, I love that. I'm going to steal that in our house.
Me
you're
too.
You're better than that. And, you know, that's a really wise way to help our kids navigate those situations. So I think you're right. Like, sometimes they laugh out of nervousness. I've laughed out of nervousness.
Oh, yes.
I've been that guy, like, where it'd be in situations and I'm laughing because it's like, you don't know what else to do mm-hmm. without making a, you know, a big scene that's not necessarily feel like it's going to solve anything. And so, but no, that's a really wise way to navigate that. Even for adults, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think for adult men, those are good ways to handle that.
Yeah. And I think it's important too. This show is about boys, right? But some of these issues overlap in girls. You know, the locker room mentality probably extends to girls as well, where there's a safe place for them to talk about, you know, things that they might not say in other places, which are also derogatory toward men. I think we have to say, as much as we're talking about ways that we can help our boys get better, there are definitely things that we as women do that are demoralizing and disrespectful to men as well. And so I just want to say, like, there probably could be another book written about how to raise girls who respect men. And that would be an entirely different book, but it has a place in the conversation as well.
Oh, I think it definitely has a place. I'll leave the writing of it to someone who has a daughter.
Yes.
But I think that clearly that is also an important part of the whole conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dave, the focus of our ministry here at Million Praying Moms is to help parents make prayer their first and best response to the challenges of parenting. So we always like to ask, if you could give us a few things you think that moms need to be praying about or for in their sons as they're trying to raise men who respect women.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. And I love the heartbeat of your ministry to call us back to prayer. You know, I heard somebody one time say, make prayer your steering wheel, not your spare tire. And stuck with me, you know, let it be that first response. And I think we forget sometimes just what a privilege it is that we have direct access to God, our Father. He wants to hear from us. And so anything worth working on or certainly worth worrying about should be started off in prayer. And as it relates to our boys, I think that whatever you're praying for your son, you should let your son know that's what you're praying for him right now. Also, you know, let him hear you pray it out loud, like on the way to school or at night. but then let him know, just, I just want you to know, I'm praying this for you. And I think some of those things are, you know, I'm praying that you would really be a leader in your generation, because I see that in you. I see that God has put so much in you to be a great influence for him, and you're going to do wonderful things. So I'm just praying that he would continue to lead you down that path. I'm praying that you would be surrounded by good friends, and that you would be a good friend to others. I'm praying that you would have the strength to withstand the temptation that you're surrounded by right now. And then celebrate the fact that, you know, for the things that he's doing right. You know, I know so many kids your age are making a lot of really bad choices that are going to create pain and baggage for him now and later in life. And I'm just so thankful that you're showing the strength of character to stay away from some of those things. And I'm praying for you, because I know it's not always easy. I'm praying that God would continue to give you the strength and provide a way out when you find yourself, you know, in a lot of temptation. And I'm praying that he would help you remember that you were created in his image exactly as you're meant to be, that God made no mistakes when he made you. And just in a world where our sons and our daughters are growing up with all kinds of insecurities, the enemy would like to lie to them and make them feel that they don't matter, or they're not good enough, or there's something wrong with, you know, the way that God made them, just reminding them that they're fearfully and wonderfully made, and that they would see that, and that they would also continue to grow to be the man or the woman that God created them to be. I think those are good places to start.
Yeah, they are. I love specifically that you said, pray it out loud over them, that they can hear it. That's kind of one of the foundational pieces of our ministry as well. And I always like to lovingly challenge moms who would say, or dads who would say, gosh, I just am not really comfortable praying out loud. Like, I just, again, lovingly challenge them to get over that. just pray it. Just pray. Just start praying. And if you're a listener right now, if you're one of our loyal listeners, then you already know this. But if you're brand new, you may not know that if you need some help knowing what to pray, we provide a daily prayer for your sons and your daughters on our Million Praying Moms social media every weekday. So you can find those on Instagram. You can find them on the Million Praying Moms Facebook page. If you're listening and you're thinking, gosh, I love the idea that Dave just said of praying in the car on the way to school, or praying out loud, then we have given you we have equipped you to do that. All you have to do is follow us there on IG or on Facebook, and you'll get one every weekday morning. So the work is done for you, which is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, so that was like a good jumping off point if you don't know where to start. Like, and oftentimes it's like, I start with that, and then it's like, oh, and this. Oh, and like, we'll go from there. And it's a good conversation starter as well with your kids. So on that note, we always like to wrap up our shows by asking our guests to share a Bible verse or a passage from the Bible that they might be currently praying for their family or for their kids. So, Dave, are there any verses that stick out to you for your family right now that you would be praying over your kids?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that God's word always has to be that foundation that we come back to. We get far away from it, and that's when the storms of life really, you know, really bring damage. One in particular that I'm praying for them, praying for myself, and especially in light of kind of this message about having the right views related to sex and related to relationships and respecting the opposite sex, is Romans chapter 12, verse 2, which says, don't conform to the pattern of this world. You know, one translation starts that verse off by saying, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you'll be able to test and approve God's perfect will for you, his good, his pleasing, and his perfect will. And our boys and our girls, for that matter, they're in a world that's trying to squeeze them into a certain mold. And, you know, I love that verse that God's saying, you know, don't fall for that trap. I've got a different plan. I've got a better plan. And it's, you're going to have to sometimes step out of the crowd. Maybe sometimes you're going to look unique, or maybe even look weird to a sinful and fallen world. And that's okay, because my plan for you is good and pleasing and perfect. And so let me renew your mind as you put my word in your heart, and as you seek me in prayer, and I'll keep you on the right path. And so that's a prayer I have for myself, for you know, for my family. And I think I think, a good verse for all us parents to be praying.
Absolutely. I love that so much. And I really love that version that you just quoted as well. I'm going to have to look that up. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. As we're closing out, tell our listeners where they can learn more about you and your ministry and your resources.
Yes. Most of what I have is something that I'm doing with outside of this book, The Raising Boys Who Respect Girls. My wife, Ashley, and I do most of our work together. And so it's mostly about marriage, and we love encouraging people in their marriages. So you can find us on the Naked Marriage Podcast. You can find Dave and Ashley Willis anywhere on social media. And to give Ashley a plug, she's got a book coming out that would be great for boy moms called Peace Pirates, which is about how to protect peace in the home. And it's funny, it is biblical, it is practical. And so I'm really excited for her with that project too. But yeah, we would love to connect with any of your listeners online, and you know, we try to answer all the messages that come in and interact with folks. So feel free to write to us.
That sounds awesome. We boy moms listening right now all just said peace. What? Yes. I'm totally signing up for that.
I am in for that.
I know. All right. Thank you again, Dave, for joining us. And that's it for today, friends. As always, you can find any specifics from our show in our show notes at millionprayingmoms.com, including a link to Dave's new book, Raising Boys Who Respect Girls: Upending Locker Room Mentality, Blind Spots, and Unintended Sexism. Tune in next week for another episode of the Million Praying Moms podcast.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.